a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. I want to thank Jill again for coming in to paint the jug or to update our jug. Got to tweet out some pictures of that coming up. But we have the MGO Blog crew here in studio to recap the last game, to talk about Brandon Peters, to look ahead to the matchup with Maryland, maybe get a little basketball recruiting in as well. Starting off with Brian Cook from MGO Blog. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Sam. I am well.
That is great.
You look cranky to me.
Ed Fang, Ed from the Power Rank. How are you this morning?
I'm great, Sam. Hey, apologize for not being here last week, but I was at the...
Not here to face the music.
That's right. I was at the exercise symposium on campus at the University of Michigan, and I think some of you out there may be wondering what this analytics and data stuff is good for. I think John Beilein had a perfect answer last week. He talked about how last year they started strapping these catapult sensors on players in practice. And so they could essentially track how hard they were working every day in practice. And what they figured out about midway through the season was that everyone was practicing the day before games at about 800, and Derek Walton was practicing at 1,000 those days. And they finally figured out, well, maybe we should tune him back. Maybe we should, you know, not make him practice so hard the day before, like just actively make the kid not work as hard. And they did. And that's when he took off last season. I asked Beilein when that happened. I was like, did that happen in late January? He's like, yeah, that's exactly when it happened.
Okay.
So the data works.
Yeah.
All right.
And, yeah, so...
So you still find yourself having to make a case for the numbers?
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's... Life is about balance. Too much of, you know, skewing too far in either direction is detrimental. Yep. But... if you totally that's the same thing. If you skew too much in one direction, you're totally discounting the other and to your own detriment. So, you know, I'm glad to hear that Michigan has a heavy analytics influence. I know that's something on the football side of things that Sean McGee has helped instill more in the football program as well. So it's a part of the fabric here. Now, we also have Craig Ross here in studio. And Craig, I mean, Brian, you'd be so proud of Craig. I mean, he gave a throwback story, a historical reference that was it was directly, absolutely, unequivocally pertinent to Michigan. Wasn't Minnesota Vikings.
Okay.
It wasn't, you know, 1896. It was 1960s, Lou Alcindor was almost a Michigan Wolverine. Twice.
Oh, yeah, because of the Bobby Knight stuff and how Wooden doesn't recruit.
Twice. He said, I was on campus at the time, and we were all talking about Lou Alcindor.
Wow.
I wanted to be a Wolverine. And then wanted to transfer once he went to UCLA. Wanted to transfer to Michigan.
Yes.
Wow.
To get off point, since I really want to be on point, I was researching the Michigan Daily from their first year, 1891, and there was a referee named Capron who they hated and thought was fixing games for University of Chicago. Who was the referee on Saturday? Who was the referee against Ohio State? Capron. I don't know if they're connected in any way, but 1891, things never change.
Good to know when you enrolled.
Yeah.
Well, Craig, real quick, you were telling the story in the break because with Alcindor, that conversation, we were talking about what might have been. I mean, he would have been here before Bo. Just think about what a presence, what significance he would have had here at Michigan as the greatest athlete to ever play here. But we got into a what might have been conversation from Justin Fargas to Kelly Baraka to Antonio Bass. This was a string for Lloyd Carr that when you look back on it, man, he had rotten luck because all three of those guys were supposed to be game changers, big time program, you know, difference making kind of guys. None of them panned out, two for injuries, one for off the field issues. But you, I guess you've had a few conversations with Lloyd about Antonio Bass.
Yeah, I know Lloyd really had a high opinion of Antonio Bass and thought he would just be a great player here. And mentioned to me that, you know, that Rich Rod, when he came in, would have had a quarterback, because I think Antonio was a quarterback at Jackson High, maybe.
Yep.
And felt that he would have been a perfect fit for Rich's system when he came here. And it was a freak injury. It wasn't a contact injury.
Right.
It was a non-contact injury, just running or doing
a
drill.
Crazy.
But because... I know that Lloyd, you know, feels... to this day, badly for that kid.
Yeah, because a player, a playmaker in space. There are a few like him. He was a guy that coming in, there was more buzz about him their freshman year than there was about Mario Manningham. We need to see what Mario became. But let's talk about the here and the now. What's mm-hmm. going on now? Last week, Michigan, outstanding rushing performance, nearly 400 yards on the ground, almost had two 200 yard rushers. And they, Brian Cook, they were like a sledgehammer running the football
against
Minnesota.
Yeah, I know you've been like pushing like, they got to do power and make more power. and they did. You must have been happy. I saw one zone play, and the rest of it was just mashing people. And we saw Cesar Ruiz get on the field for the first time, and he moved some dudes. He had one big pass protection issue, but I had no other negatives for him in this game. So that's a really good sign for next year. Steven Spinellis moved some dudes. So they have a number of interior offensive linemen now where I feel like they have good depth there. And it's just tackle where it's like, well, what is this? Mm-hmm. But, they've been building to this. And I'm very glad that the last 2 weeks it happened because, like, I felt crazy when I was, like, after the Penn State game when Caron Higdon has 45 yards and I'm like, the run game is getting better, and it's getting there, guys. and I must have sounded crazy. But
you didn't sound crazy to anyone in this room because we kept saying, you know, that game was all about game flow. They got down. And you get down like that, you get taken out of your game plan. So,
well, they also had a bunch of plays where one guy screwed up. Mm-hmm. So, like, you're just trying to get those one guy plays down and actually execute as a team. And Michigan is doing that with consistency on all their gap runs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the numbers definitely support that the running game was starting to get better during that Penn State game. I've been looking at line yards, which is a way of assigning credit on running plays to the offensive line. So you get dinged a little bit for negative yards, about 120% for those yards. You get all credit for the first 4 yards. You get half credit for the next 6 yards and none beyond that. So if you look at the Penn State game, Michigan actually had 3.48 line yards per carry, which is good. I think they averaged less than 3 last year. And that was really surprising because I think you lose sight of that in terms of just how that game played out with the defense having their worst game ever. Against Rutgers, they had 3.61, very good performance. And Minnesota actually a little bit less, 3.54. And I think that shows you the distribution because they had 11 yards per carry against Minnesota. We probably give a little bit more credit to the breakaway power of the backs in that game. But the line, I mean, there's really nothing to complain about the last 3 games, and I don't think these have been pushover defenses either.
Minnesota was a pushover.
I mean, I don't...
I can state that unequivocally. They entered the game, I think, 82nd in S&P Plus, and that was largely before they had a lot of injury problems in their secondary. And, you know, on the first big run, they have a cornerback or a safety who's just way out of position, 2 actually. And then one of the linebackers just had no idea what was going on the whole game. So, you know, they paved them, and they did a really good job. That was the worst rush defense Michigan has played in a long time.
Yeah.
Probably this year, given their
– Worse than Air Force?
Yeah.
I don't know if the numbers bear that out.
Air Force has a system that they all know, and the Minnesota does not because of their injury issues. So, but, I mean, we saw – Chris Evans break a linebacker tackle and go for a 67-yard touchdown. I was like, okay, son. Because he's had terrible luck with blocking this year. So he comes in and everybody decides that they're going to take a play off, and then he gets buried in the backfield for a 3-yard loss. And it was good to see him get like a modicum of blocking and be able to flash the talent that he flashed last year. Everybody's really down on him, but like I think you see that when he gets – into that second level, he's electric.
Yeah, you sound like Jim. He said the same thing after the game, that he's had rotten luck when he's been in the game. He's been the victim of some of the issues that you talked about. But, you know, I got a question on the board. It said, so does this mean inside zone is dead and buried for Michigan? I don't think it is. I just think it's, I think it's something that will improve in time. But for now, what they are, and we have been saying this for weeks, what they are, what they do well, is they come off the football, they get downhill, and it's ground and pound, baby. They power, counter, ISO, toss. The plays where come assignment football, hat on a hat, and move people, they can do that. And the single biggest, and I want to know if you guys agree with this. If you don't, please tell me. I think the single biggest factor in the improvement in that aspect of their ground attack is the guard play. Their guard play is better this year.
Yeah, and also you bring in Bushel Beatty, like, and you could call him a guard. But he moves people. He blew the defensive end or defensive tackle 3 yards downfield on the first big Higdon run, and I think he's a big factor, and then Onwenu kind of coming into his own, and I think Bredesen's had a good couple of weeks where he's grading out like plus 10 to me.
You know, for as much as they ask their guards to be on the move, there are glaring examples in my mind of the past couple of years where, you know, a guy pulls and he sometimes just doesn't get there. I mean, hell, the back would beat him to the hole. Yeah. So he'll get caught up, or he'll get there, and there will be a defender, like, right there in the hole. He'll
just run
right by him.
Yeah, that's
– run right by him to get to his assignment. I get it, but not able to kind of process on his feet. Okay, I got to block the guy right here.
Yeah.
If I don't block the guy right here, he'll never get to my assigned guy, or they would get to their assigned guy and just whiff on the block in space. These guys can think on their feet. So if they get to the hole and there is a defender there, they block him. Or if it's a space play, they can actually block a guy in space. And there was no more vivid example of what I'm talking about than on that screenplay to Chris Evans on 3rd and 17, where you had two guys, one of which was the guard that replaced Caesar, that ran right by the guy who wound up making the play. I think that would have gone for a first down.
Yeah, I do too. But that was a rare mistake.
Yeah, it was, but it exemplifies what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, you're right,
about.
But, like, I went over the game, and I didn't think that there was anything else that was, like, a real glaring error. For a whole football game where you're running most of the time, that's something I haven't seen before at Michigan.
Encouraging.
It is encouraging.
It's encouraging, but my question is the sustainability of it against teams with – a pulse. I'm not saying Minnesota had no pulse. Brian thinks maybe not.
They had no pulse.
And Ed disagrees. But I mean, my question is whether, you know, how sustainable this is going forward. I think the running game has looked better since Michigan State. Actually, in times of Michigan State, it wasn't too bad. But the question is whether they can actually put this improvement together in a meaningful way when they've got to do something else.
Yeah, I mean, numbers-wise, Indiana, Penn State, Minnesota all have good rush defenses. I think Minnesota had a bad game. I think I expected them to be better. Rutgers is terrible, so the fact that we ran them over. Is it reproducible against Wisconsin or Ohio State? Well, to be determined, but, I mean, those defenses rate only slightly higher than some of the ones that they've done pretty well against.
Well, they've established that they have a thing. They can run power. And once you've established that, then the opponent reacts to that, and you can hit them with constraint plays. If Michigan can throw the ball at all, Brandon Peters will be given excellent opportunities to find guys downfield, maybe soft corners, especially given the way not Derek Tindall. Wisconsin's other corner got worked by Simi Cobbs and should have gotten about 3 more pass interference flags than he did get. So that's a guy who's a weak point. And if you're going to bring those safeties up, that guy's going to be one-on-one against Donovan Peoples-Jones, and he's going to get worked. So can Michigan take advantage of that?
It is Donovan Peoples-Jones isn't close to Simi Cobbs, though, at this point in time.
Yeah,
may get there, but he's not there yet.
I mean, this guy can't cope.
Okay.
And I'm not calling them semi-cows, but this is going to be a one-on-one situation. We saw in the Minnesota game when Michigan did drop back and pass to Peoples-Jones that he was able to get open because people really do respect his deep speed. So are they going to be able to back safeties off? Are they going to be able to bring out some counters to their extant stuff? I think so. You know, Michigan had a couple of new things on their first drive. They had that throwback screen. They had, like, the fake pitch waggle thing that got called back. But after they went up, like, 20-7, they were just content to continue running their split-flow counterplay and then just regular power. So, like Penn State, they've had a couple of games now where they've kind of been able to, you know, just put stuff back in the barn and keep the, some of the new stuff from hitting the field. So maybe by the time Wisconsin rolls around, you've got 2, 3, 4 weeks of that stuff built up.
Yeah, I just it so much is this. They needed something to hang their hat on, and they have it. So hang the freaking hat. It was kind of my response to the guy who in the press conference said, "Well, why didn't you throw the football?"
There was a guy. There's in the Rutgers game. There was a guy behind me who was just like every time that Michigan had a play, he was like, "Run the ball!" No, he said, "Throw the ball!" And this is like O'Korn, like having very large issues. And I was just like, "Oh my God, shut up!" Like Michigan had first and goal from the 10, and the guy's like, "Throw the ball!" And they give it to Karen Hinkton, and he's like, "No!" And then he scores a touchdown from the 10, and he's like, "All right." Like, he wasn't even happy because it was a rushing touchdown.
Dude, I would pay money to sit next to Brian Cook with this guy behind him. That's awesome.
I had to, like, look back at him and see what he looked like at one point, and he just kind of, like, shrugged at me. Like, he knew he was insane.
Like, No.
He, like, looked at me and he's like, sorry.
No, he does not know he's insane. You know that better than anyone.
No, like, he knows. Yeah, he knows.
No. We gotta get to
him, right? He's like Craig. He's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm insane."
Hey, I never apologize.
That's true.
We got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com. We are live here inside the MDN studios. Brian Cook, Ed Fang, Craig Ross. I mean, probably in another life, these are all brothers. We were all brothers at some point, another lifespan.
This is weird, man.
That's kind of... the kind of vibe that we have here in studio. And a couple of us fight like brothers often. I'm surprised that a fight hasn't broken out just yet. A mini one that had to do with Brandon Peters in the break. You felt like...
What?
You felt like he, you know, after the hit, he was not as on point.
Yeah,
and Brian said, hey, he was rushed. He was rushed, and that's why I wanted to pass his maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I when a guy gets hit like that, you just kind of hope that two of his next throws don't end up in the ground at his receiver's feet. But if everyone thinks he's all right and he's going to be fine moving forward, yeah, I'm good with that.
The sideline protocol, concussion protocol, is at Michigan, of all places, is going to be, you know, above and beyond reproach. So, yeah. And Brian, you made the point that he was rushed on one of those.
Well, he has this, it's like second and 23 after the weird Kugler chop block penalty, which we can get into in a little bit. I think we just did. And he's going for the first down. He's got Shanley on a post, and he almost makes a really good throw, but Bushel beat his guy, has kind of gotten into him, and he can't get his follow through all the way, so it goes wide. But that's a good read in a tight window, and he almost hit that. I thought he turfs one to Hill after he takes that thunder sack because of the Ruiz issue.
Thunder sack.
I mean, I would not want to be on the receiving end of that.
So you hear the key bait countdown to kickoff, and Ira may play it tomorrow. You going to play Brandon Peters tomorrow, Ira? My one-on-one with Brandon?
Yes, it's going to play at some point tomorrow.
So he said, I went to the bench, and I said, Alex, what happened? And he said, dude, Caesar just let that guy come out the block. So
Well, and it's good that we can laugh about it now.
Right. He laughed about it. He laughed about it too, because everything is fine. He's like, dude, it was like the starter pistol went off, and it was like just teeing off on you, man.
In Ruiz's defense, the guy took an angle that made Ruiz think he was stunting. So, like, he was like, all right, I need to pick up the guy coming from further inside, which is, you know, an advanced mental thing that he got totally wrong. But other than that, he was good.
He was good.
He moved people.
He was good. And Caesar, man, you have got to appreciate the guys that are really, I mean, they're just really having fun. And that's Caesar, because I saw him after the game, and he came on said this on the air earlier this week. He said, man, did you see me? Did you see me out there? Yeah, I saw you. I saw you, man. It was great. It was love good it. To see you. You got to love that, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how a fan would react if they were out there playing, right?
Well, probably wouldn't do as well. Except true. On that play, I could do that. I'd be like,
see ya.
You go tackle that quarterback, buddy.
Right. All right. So, guys,
but the whole offensive line, I mean, Bushel Beatty has been a good run blocker in the last couple of weeks. And, it's just the pass blocking. It's just the pass pro is just so shaky. And it's not just one person all the time either. It's concerning.
And I got to tell you, that's for Bushel Beatty, it's funny to say it now. One of the things last year, because you remember he started a game and then he was out. Yeah. One of the things was they wanted to feel him more in the run game. A guy that big,
right?
I mean, you should feel that presence, and it feels like we're feeling that now.
Yeah, he's been consistent. We've mentioned him a couple of times over the past couple of weeks as a guy who really gives Michigan kind of that road grading identity. He's a Runyon style left tackle, where he's just gonna move you and. That really gives Michigan two edges they can run power to, and that's a huge difference because you run it to Bredesen
really
and Cole.
Good point.
That's going to be a profitable proposition most of the time. And then if you run it the other way, now you've got Onwenu or Ruiz and Bushel Beatty, and those guys, if they double you, I haven't seen anyone hold up yet.
Yeah. Before we get to the phones, guys, so a word or two about defense. This was a stymieing effort and a record-setting performance by Kalik Hudson. They went back and gave him some extra stats, much to the chagrin of Chase Winovich, who says they steal stats from him after every game.
He earned that. Kalik earned that sack that they gave to Chase. So shouldn't be mad about that.
Well, Chase said it, but it happens all the time. He said, man, it feel like I get 2-3 sacks a game. I come back, I got a sack and a half because they've taken sacks from me. But on this occasion, Kalik Hudson, He was an unbelievable factor for Michigan in this game.
He had the highest score ever for a Power 5 player, I think, on Pro Football Focus. Is that right?
Yeah.
Sound skeptical.
He needs to give PJ Fleck some of that award because their scheme was idiotic. They run that wildcat thing. And their mesh point on that is so bad that Hudson eventually is just like, you know what? The quarterback is not a threat at all. I'm just going to go tackle his running back. And the first time or two, he had a corner blitz behind him, so he didn't have responsibility. But later in the game, he was just like, I'm just going to go tackle the running back. And he did a great job. But man, PJ Fleck put it on a platter for him. It was amazing. Why were they doing that? It blew my mind.
Because Penn State did it.
That's exactly what.
And it didn't work. They got one big play because Gary got way upfield. But the actual design of the play, the inverted veer part of it, they got about 3 yards of carry on it.
Right, and they tried to do the fade to the slot, slant to the slot a couple of times, and it worked. It worked a little early, but they really weren't gonna make any hay dropping back to pass against Michigan.
I mean, Minnesota did put some yards up in the first quarter and a bit. I think they had 135 yards at the end, early in the second quarter.
Their first two drives were somewhat productive.
But then by the end of the third quarter, they had 95 yards. So they had negative yardage in the second and third quarters.
Well, you see that where, a team comes in, they have a script, they have some new plays, mm-hmm. and they had that little pitch thing that worked for 8 yards the first time.
Their motion into the jet seemed to be.
And the jet stuff was effective for a frustratingly long amount of time. Mm-hmm. We saw it with Rich Rod early, right, where they had something new, they'd bring it out, it would work for about a half, and then they would just get downloaded and they'd be done because they couldn't do enough, and that's what Minnesota has.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the phones at 734-998-1050. Talk to Don in Ann Arbor. Don, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Sam, gentlemen. Sam, I want to follow up in your comments during the recruiting roundup about, Michigan, where does Michigan recruit? And the notion that Michigan isn't recruiting Ohio. There is a longtime poster on MGO blog who used to recruit for Michigan in Ohio back in the early 90s, and he still lives in Ohio, and he's in contact with at least some high schools in Ohio. And his assertion is that Michigan has definitely backed off significantly in effort and attention in recruiting in the state of Ohio. You know, I can't speak to, you know, his assertion, but I think he's a straightforward guy. At any rate,
I don't think there's any. I don't think that's even a debate. You know, Michigan doesn't. Well, yeah, they don't have as many resources on the ground in Ohio as they once did. That's not up for debate.
Yeah. Well, I guess my question is to the group there. Is that counterproductive in the long run? Does it make sense if in fact we have sort of backed off for demographic reasons? Can we afford to do that? I'm curious what your collective take is. Thank you.
I think Ohio is just another state, and there are some good players in there. But you know, they're going hard in Georgia, they're going hard in Florida, and they're getting results in both those states. They're getting results in California. Temporarily in Devin Asiasi's case, unfortunately, but like I think they're just taking an approach where Michigan is their home state, and they have some focus in Michigan, but every other state is just every other state.
Yeah, I think, you know, as I said during the recruiting roundup, I don't think that, you know, any approach is all upside. You know, I feel like during Lloyd's time, his philosophy was there was always going to be a certain percentage of guys from the state and from Ohio. And, you know, in a really good year, that's going to be outstanding. So like last year, for instance, Michigan, state of Michigan was outstanding for talent. This year, it wouldn't be as fruitful because it's a down year in state. Now, the theory behind that approach is, you know, you're going to be able to weather those storms, because when you get back on an uptick, because you have been a consistent presence in these places, you're going to, in theory, have a easier time getting those guys to stay home or to come up from Ohio. You know, the flip side is, and this is where Jim comes in. He's going where the talent is, in any given year. Last year was a lot of talent in Michigan. So guess what? A lot of the class came from Michigan. This year, talent isn't as prevalent in Michigan. So guess what? A lot of the focus is outside the state. And on a yearly basis, to your point, Brian, they're going to go where the talent is. And Georgia is going to be a consistent talent producer. They're going to consistently be there. Same thing with Florida. But look at Ohio State. If you want to know where the state of Ohio is talent-wise in a given year, look at Ohio State's focus in the state. It's not like Ohio State is taking, you know,
eight guys.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? They aren't loading up their class right now with, you know, 80% Ohio guys.
No, I don't think they have that many. I think they have like three or four. So if that is what Ohio State thinks is the talent level in the state, then that's probably what Michigan thinks too.
Doesn't a lot of it depend upon your staff and their contacts? I mean, well, you know, like Greg Fry, who's got Florida contacts.
It could, but Jim doesn't. I mean, they don't subscribe to that theory. Mm-hmm. Chris Partridge had no discernible tie to Georgia, and he's been down there recruiting.
Okay.
Now, can it be a benefit? Like, if you have a tie to an area, will they emphasize that? Will they utilize it? Sure. So, Greg Fry in the Tampa area, Partridge in Jersey, Don Brown in the Northeast, of course. They will utilize those ties, but they'll go wherever to recruit guys. And that was another thing. And it was, look, I think there's more than one way to skin a cat. Again, I can see the upside to saying, hey, we are going to have a consistent focus in our home state in Ohio. But there's a downside to that, too. And then on this other thing, you can see the upside in going anywhere in the country where there's talent. But if you, it's going to be more difficult if you don't have ties. So I can see the downside there. But I don't think, to the caller, to Don's point, I mean, the question suggests, it implies that something is wrong and that Michigan is going to suffer as a result. And I guess I don't buy that.
No, I think it's like Jim was at Stanford, and at Stanford you have to recruit in a very different way. You have to recruit Stanford people who can get into Stanford. And, I think you see that in some of Jim's recruiting because, you know, okay, they're going down and they've got Chris Hinton in Atlanta. And, like, Chris Hinton can be a Michigan guy. He's from Georgia, but his dad was an NFL player.
Went to Northwestern.
Northwestern, yeah.
Went to Northwestern. So that's kind of like a different kind of guy. And Michigan made him and his brother a huge focus, and they got him, and they'll probably get his brother. And I think that's what he's looking for. He's not looking for a guy from Ohio. He's looking for a Michigan kind of guy. And just by the nature of it, those guys are going to be spread out in a lot of different places.
And they still get – I mean, they still got to get – James Hudson, I think, is going to be a major player for Michigan.
Yes.
Nolan Rumler, who's in the 19 class. So, I mean, it's not like they've –
Rumler was like just a guy who was going to be here from birth.
But so. I mean, as far as guys, so I know Maddie. I know Madison is in Ohio. I know Zordich is in Ohio. They tend to also recruit a lot by position as things break down. So you might see some other guys pop in there. But at one point, you know, I know they've had 4 to 5 coaches in Ohio, and there's no question that Michigan doesn't do that anymore. So
yeah, I've never quite understood the. We must only recruit from this area narrative.
I think that's what they're saying. I think they're saying, like, there's a lot of talent here and it's close by, so let's go get it.
Well, there is a study. It was in the Journal of Quantitative Sports Analysis or something like that. And they showed that teams that recruit within 250 miles of their campus tend to do better. Now, I don't know what that means.
It means there's a lot of talent in the South is what that means.
Maybe that's right. But it was sort of a curious study.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what the stat was if you exclude the South from the study. So yeah,
is that cause or effect? So if you're in Nebraska and you're not recruiting nearby, I mean, that's kind of because there's nobody nearby.
Mm-hmm. And is that a problem for Nebraska right now?
Could be.
I got to ask you guys to think about this in the break. What the hell happened in Iowa City? I cannot explain it. I don't know if there's a number, if there's some sort of statistical analysis that could explain it. Just chew on it. So, guys, I asked you before we went to the break, what the hell?
What happened in Iowa City?
Yes.
We only lost by one. I don't know what's going on now. Like, Ferentz does rope-a-dope. So, like, he saves all his stuff for, like, Michigan or Ohio State.
Were any of you...
They had a fake punt that was, like, pretty cool.
But see, were any of you as convinced as I was that JT Barrett had turned the corner?
Yes. But it turns out that Penn State and Michigan State both have terrible pass defenses. And they've been sheltered by the Big Ten. So that game is a shootout where both quarterbacks go for like 400 yards with comically open wide receivers all day. And it's just like, oh, well, that's what happened to JT Barrett. It's like Penn State's pass defense is terrible.
Yeah, it's not terrible.
It looks pretty terrible.
Yeah, it's not terrible.
I mean, their last two games.
Oh, yeah, last two games. Let's go off of that. That's a great sample size to go off.
Well, how many quarterbacks are there in the Big Ten? I think there's about three, and one of them plays for Penn State. So if you're asking me whether, you know, Penn State should be judged on how they played John O'Korn or how they played JT Barrett, I'm going to go with JT Barrett. So sometimes there's nuance in statistics.
Sometimes two games is too small a sample to say anything.
I love it. This is great. Hey, so
I don't think those games.
The 100 throws from two competent quarterbacks and they get shredded. I'm going to go with those throws.
I don't think that those games should be a surprise. 55 points is a surprise. Yeah. But when you've got two teams playing in a huge game, and then the following week they both go on the road against teams that are one team who I think is a pretty good team, Michigan State, and the other team at least has more than a pulse in Iowa, you're going to have trouble. And both of those teams are competently coached. So, I mean, I think it was almost predictable, certainly, that those teams would struggle, maybe that they wouldn't lose. Now, how Iowa scores 55 points is a mystery. Yeah,
I'm certainly going to defer to you, Craig, because you picked them. So yes. Clearly, I mean, whatever you saw heading into that game has some merit. I just don't know how you I don't know how you saw it.
So we've seen this kind of crazy flukishness from Urban Meyer one other time. So when Michigan State came in 2 years ago without Connor Cook
and took the air out of the ball,
dropped an egg. I mean, they just laid the biggest egg I've ever seen.
That was a bad weather game, and Barrett
It was a bad weather game.
So
come on. I mean, I think the Iowa game was probably a low
possession
worse,
game. It was a really low possession game, a bad weather game, and they took the air out of the ball, and it was tight. I mean, I could see that. Mr. Ira Weintraub brought up an amazing stat. They had never scored over 35 points.
Ever
against Ohio State. Right.
So they get four picks, and that helps.
That does. But six, right? And, you know, this Iowa team, another stat from Steve Clark, they were averaging 14 points a game. You remove Illinois, you're going to have to score more than 14 to beat Ohio. Clearly they did, but I didn't see them putting together a massive offensive performance against this team.
So four picks, one's a pick six. They get a fake punt that gets them down to, like, the three. Well, I think, were there two fake punts in that game?
The one fake punt was brilliant.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, it was a sweet play.
Yeah, how the hell did they get him on the fake punt? It was like a fake punt for like 20.
My thing is like, dude, Akram Wadley went for like 120 yards. He hasn't been able to run against anybody this year because their offensive line is terrible.
Now, Bosa was out also.
He got booted with a targeting call.
And maybe in the second quarter or something. No,
but like they're supposed to have like 65 defensive ends who are all going to be first-round NFL draft picks.
Right.
So like, okay, right. Losing Bosa is a blow, but it's not like a devastating blow.
So I was kind of interesting in my numbers because I thought they were by purely points, I thought they were a little overrated at 17th. You know, they got a lot of credit for beating Iowa State. They hung close with Penn State earlier in the game, which a game that probably shouldn't have been close if you looked at the yards in that game.
But they also had a real chance. I mean, Penn State won that in the last play of the game.
Right. Last but, I mean, you know, game. Penn State on, the, you know, in terms of moving the ball, Penn State was clearly the better team in that game. A little bit high for Iowa. I actually posted pure points-wise that Ohio State was going to win by three. Got a lot of crap on Twitter because I thought that was way too low. So I had to go explain how some of my other metrics, you know, had it a lot more.
I got a statistical analysis I want you to perform. Is Kinnick Stadium the toughest place to play in the Big Ten?
It's certainly right in there. I don't know why, but it seems to be for Michigan.
Unless you're Northwestern.
Unless you're whatever.
I mean, they clearly play well against top five teams. And then the markets were super funny on that game, too, because Ohio State was like a 16-point favorite, and it got to like 21 before a kick on the road. Yeah. It's just a funny game.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to say like I was super right in saying that Ohio State was only going to win by three by any means, but it's just a lot of things were in that.
Had only Ohio State by three.
I thought it was way too low.
No, I think it's on the money. I think it was on the money given everything that we knew or should have known.
We got to pick this up next week, fellas. As always, it's been fun. It's been real.
Better than